This program is provided by lawyer Kyung Jin Kim.
I mean, just imagine waking up tomorrow, pulling out your phone and asking it to, you know, book a ride to the airport.
Right.
But instead of you opening an app, typing in the destination and hunting for the best price, your phone screen seemingly just takes on a life of its own.
Like it has a mind of its own.
Exactly. It physically opens the rideshare app, taps the buttons, compares the fares, and books the car on your behalf. And then when your monthly phone bill arrives, you aren't charged for the megabytes of data you downloaded. You're actually charged in thought tokens.
Right. Paying for the computational calories the artificial intelligence burned to do those tasks for you.
Yeah. And I know that sounds like a concept video from some tech summit, like 5 years in the future.
Oh, totally. It sounds like pure sci-fi.
But it is actually a commercial reality that launched just this week.
Which is just wild to think about.
And that is exactly why we are here today. So welcome to today's deep dive. Our mission is to really unpack this massive, simultaneous technological push happening right now across AI, robotics, semiconductors, and telecommunications.
There is just so much ground to cover.
There really is.
Yeah.
And to help us navigate this overwhelming wave of information, the foundation of today's deep dive is a comprehensive report and commentary provided by lawyer Kyung Jin Kim, a former lawmaker. He has synthesized some incredible, just paradigm-shifting developments from mid-July 2026.
Yeah, and looking at the sheer volume of data lawyer Kyung Jin Kim has compiled, you quickly realize we aren't just examining a few isolated product updates here.
Right.
I mean, we are analyzing the active real-time blueprint for a rapidly shifting global tech order.
Exactly. And before we really get into the weeds, I do want to be completely clear with you listening. The sources we are unpacking today deal with intense geopolitical strategies and national policies, specifically out of China and South Korea.
Very heavy topic.
Right. So we are looking at this from a purely analytical standpoint. We aren't taking sides, and we are not endorsing the political viewpoints of any government or entity mentioned in this material.
We're just looking at the facts.
Yeah, we are simply here to impartially report and analyze the ideas and the raw data contained in the original sources so you can understand the mechanics of what is happening globally. So, okay, let's unpack this.
Let's do it.
We have to start at the epicenter, which is the World AI Conference, or WAIC 2026, which opened in Shanghai on July 17th.
And, you know, just the physical footprint of this event alone is a massive statement of intent.
It is staggering. I mean, the exhibition area spanned 100,000 square meters.
Wow.
Yeah. They showcased 261 different large AI models, 108 distinct types of chips, and they even featured 9 Turing Award and Nobel Prize laureates on their speaker panels.
That is a massive concentration of brain power.
It really is. But beneath all that hardware and prestige, the detail that fundamentally anchors this entire event is that President Xi Jinping delivered the opening keynote.
Which, you know, he has not done since the event's inception back in 2018.
Right.
So his direct presence there elevates artificial intelligence from a vital commercial industry to the absolute pinnacle of China's national security and geopolitical strategy.
It's a huge signal.
Exactly. It signals that AI is now the primary tool for designing a new international order.
And the centerpiece of that new order is this proposal he put forward to establish WAI2, which is the World AI Cooperation Organization, and that would be headquartered right there in Shanghai.
Right.
But when I look at the concept of WAI2, my mind immediately goes to traditional institutions like the UN or NATO. Is this just a giant trade show, or is there a bigger political play happening here? Like, are they trying to build a diplomatic voting block, or is this purely about controlling technical source code?
Well, according to lawyer Kyung Jin Kim's commentary, it is a deliberate fusion of both, aimed specifically at the global south.
Okay, how so?
Well, currently the United States and Europe are aggressively driving the global AI safety frameworks.
Mm-hmm.
They are establishing the regulatory guardrails and technical standards.
Right, the rules of the road.
Exactly. The WAI co-proposal is a strategic countermove to create a parallel AI governance structure. I mean, it offers developing nations an alternative framework that might align better with their own sovereign interests or, you know, their developmental speeds.
So they're basically offering a different dictionary for how AI is defined, governed, and distributed.
Yeah, and that alternative dictionary creates a massive bifurcation in the global market.
I can imagine.
Because if the regulatory ecosystem splits into two distinct camps, countries caught in the geopolitical middle, like South Korea, for instance, they suddenly face the immense diplomatic and economic burden of trying to comply with both frameworks simultaneously.
That sounds like a nightmare for multinational companies.
It is. And beyond diplomacy, the technical standards established at WAIC will serve as the strict entry requirements for any foreign company attempting to access the Chinese market moving forward.
Wow. But you know, if you want to build a parallel AI governance structure, you can't just rely on treaties and software.
No, you need the hardware.
Right. You need the physical engines to power the compute. You need semiconductors.
Absolutely.
And this is actually where I have to push back on a statistic in our sources, because the math just feels entirely disconnected from reality.
Okay. What stood out to you?
Well, the report notes that in the first half of 2026, China's integrated circuit, or IC exports, hit $177.28 billion.
Right.
That is a 96.1% jump year over year. And I just thought, wait, did China suddenly double its physical cutting-edge chip manufacturing capacity overnight?
Because that's impossible.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Building a semiconductor fab takes years of construction and billions in capital. It doesn't just happen in 6 months.
It does take years. And the nuance here is really critical to understanding the actual state of their manufacturing.
Okay, break it down for me.
So they did not double their physical output of advanced silicon overnight.
Yeah.
If you look at the raw data, the actual volume of chips exported, the sheer physical number of units leaving the country actually decreased over that same period.
Wait, really? They exported fewer chips but generated nearly double the revenue. How does that mechanic even work?
It comes down to macro market dynamics.
Yeah.
And the specific types of processes involved. The massive revenue spike is primarily driven by soaring global prices for memory chips.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, think of DRAM as your computer's short-term working memory. It's the active disk space where it thinks and processes tasks in real time.
Right.
While NAND is essentially the filing cabinet for long-term storage.
Okay, that makes sense.
So the insatiable global build-out of AI data centers has caused the unit prices for both DRAM and NAND to skyrocket. So the value of the exports surged even as the actual volume dipped.
Ah, okay. So it is an inflation of value based on demand rather than an explosion of new advanced fabrication lines.
Well, partially. The other major factor is that a significant portion of this export value comes from back-end processes.
Meaning what, exactly?
Meaning packaging and testing chips that may have been fabricated elsewhere, rather than the highly complex front-end fabrication of cutting-edge silicon wafers.
Oh, wow. So if their massive export revenue jump is largely an illusion driven by price inflation and back-end testing, where is their actual physical manufacturing threat coming from?
That leads us straight to CXMT. Or Jingxin Memory Technologies.
Right. They just locked in their IPO on the STAR Market for July 27th, and the scale is just wild.
It's massive.
Yeah. They are targeting a raise of up to 666 billion yuan, which translates to roughly 9.8 billion U.S. dollars if they exercise their overallotment. That makes it the biggest IPO in Asia this year.
And that IPO is highly consequential for the structural balance of the global semiconductor market.
How so?
Well, CXMT is already the world's fourth largest drop maker. They capture about 7.7% of the global market share right now.
Okay.
If they take that $9.8 billion capital injection and aggressively scale up their production of DDR5 and LPDDR5X memory, that changes things.
And I should probably jump in here for a second just to clarify. DDR5 and LPDDR5X, those are essentially the current workhorse memory standards for desktop servers and modern smartphones, right? Like high volume, highly necessary components.
Yes, exactly. They are the foundational memory tiers for modern computing. So flooding the market with subsidized, high-volume production of those specific chips poses a severe midterm threat to the legacy oligopoly.
Right, because for years, the memory market has been so tightly controlled by Samsung, SK Hynix, and Micron.
Precisely. And CXMT's massive war chest means aggressive, sustained price competition in that general-purpose memory sector is inevitable.
That's going to be brutal for the legacy players.
It is. Furthermore, lawyer Kunjin Kim's material notes that Apple is currently testing CXMT's DRAM for devices sold within China.
Oh, wow. Apple is testing their chips.
Yeah, and passing that rigorous technical validation would legitimize them instantly and dramatically expand their global customer base.
Though I guess it is important to contextualize this, they are still lagging significantly behind in HBM, or high bandwidth memory, right?
Absolutely.
Which is the ultra advanced stacked memory specifically required to run alongside cutting edge AI processors. So the immediate threat is aimed squarely at the massive middle tier of the market, not necessarily the bleeding edge.
Yeah, the structural shift is absolutely happening in the volume driven middle market first. However, if we shift our focus to the bleeding edge of raw compute power, we have to examine Huawei's debut on the WAIC exhibition floor.
Oh, you're talking about the Atlas 950 SuperPod.
Yes.
This cluster is a monster. I mean, we are talking about linking together 8,192 Ascend 950 chips into a single system.
It's an incredible scale.
And the performance claims they're making are bold. They state it boasts 2.87 times the performance of NVIDIA's H20 chip, but operates at a quarter of the price.
And the critical metric here isn't just the individual chip speed, right? It is the scale of the cluster itself.
What do you mean?
Well, when training massive language models, the primary bottleneck is often how fast the chips can talk to each other without losing data.
Ah, the interconnectivity.
Right. Linking 8,192 domestic chips together efficiently into a cohesive neural network is an incredibly difficult engineering feat.
Right. That's not just slapping chips on a motherboard.
No, not at all. Proving they can manage that interconnectivity puts their cluster technology into the absolute top tier globally.
And we know this isn't just a prototype gathering dust after a trade show, because ByteDance has already placed a $5.6 billion order for these systems.
It's a massive vote of confidence.
Plus, Huawei is slated to push these SuperPods into the South Korean data center market by the fourth quarter.
Which is huge.
Right. But, you know, hardware is ultimately just a very expensive paperweight without an application layer. So they have the hardware, but what are they actually running on all these chips?
Well, that brings us to the consumer software side. And this is where things really feel like they are shifting beneath our feet. Because the consumer application layer is where these abstract technical leaps translate into daily friction.
Let's talk about the StepX Neo. At WAIC, the award for Supreme Treasure of the Exhibition went to this smartphone. It is built by a company called StepFun, running a native AI operating system called StepAOS.
Right.
And to really understand this, think about how you operate your phone right now. You unlock the screen, you locate the food delivery app, you scroll through the menus, you select the items, and you hit confirm. You are doing the manual labor of navigating the digital interface.
Right. You essentially act as the physical operator of the software tool.
Exactly. The StepX Neo fundamentally flips that dynamic. It passed the National Level 3 standard for AI terminal intelligence.
Which is significant.
Very. It features a hyper-competent AI agent living physically at the operating system level. You simply tell the phone your goal, and the AI agent assumes control of the interface. It physically opens up apps like Alipay, Didi, or Meituan. It navigates the menus, and it taps the buttons for you. It executes multi-step processes across different closed applications without you ever needing to touch the screen.
And the commercial readiness of this device cannot be overstated.
Because others are still testing this, right?
Exactly. Legacy players globally, including Samsung with their Galaxy AI initiatives, they are still largely in the testing phases of integrating autonomous agents that can seamlessly cross over between different third-party apps.
Right.
But China has just showcased a commercially finished product that vertically integrates the large language model, the operating system, and the physical hardware.
And here's where it gets really interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Because the moment the AI starts doing the heavy lifting on your phone, the way you pay your phone bill changes, too.
This is such a huge shift.
It is. China's massive telecom operators, so China Telecom, China Mobile, and China Unicom, they're beginning to ditch traditional cellular data plans. Well, instead of charging you for gigabytes of data, they are rolling out AI token subscriptions.
And this represents a profound shift in the foundational business model of telecommunications.
Just to give you an idea of the pricing, China Telecom is starting these plans at just 9.9 yuan a month, which is about $1.50 US, for 10 million AI tokens.
That's incredibly cheap.
It is. And they are aggressively targeting 200 million accounts operating on this token model by the fourth quarter.
Wow.
But for someone listening who is, you know, used to just paying for unlimited 5G data, how does token billing actually function mechanically?
Right. So it shifts the commodity from bandwidth to processing power. Instead of paying for the sheer volume of data you stream or download, you pay for the computational effort the AI exerts.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. So asking your on-device AI to summarize a plain text email might cost 5 tokens, while asking it to generate a high-resolution video or navigate a complex rideshare booking might cost 500 tokens.
So you are purchasing units of intelligence?
Exactly. It is the world's first large-scale experiment in transforming a telecom company from a dumb pipe that just delivers raw data into a distribution platform that sells active intelligence.
And for telecommunications companies worldwide, Successfully executing this pivot is like the holy grail of monetization, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Historically, telecoms built the expensive infrastructure, while the tech giants built the apps that reaped all the profits.
Right.
So if China successfully normalizes a token-based subscription model across hundreds of millions of users, telecom giants in other regions like KT, SKT, and LG Uplus in South Korea, who possess their own native AI models but haven't successfully transitioned to token billing, well, they will be analyzing this rollout meticulously.
Yeah, they'll be watching it like a hawk. So AI is reshaping our smartphone interfaces. It's rewriting telecom billing, but it is no longer confined to the digital realm.
Not at all.
It is literally stepping out into the physical world.
Literally stepping.
Exactly. If we look at the robotics sector, the acceleration is blinding. There is a startup called Limex Dynamics that just closed a pre-IPO funding round, vaulting their valuation to 150 billion yuan, or roughly 2.2 billion US dollars.
That is a massive valuation for a robotics startup.
It is. They raised $200 million in this latest round alone, backed by a highly diverse syndicate of international investors from the UAE, Italy, and Germany, alongside domestic capital.
And the velocity of capital moving into Chinese robotics is indicative of a massive industrial pivot.
Just how fast is it moving?
Well, in just the second quarter of 2026, the robotics sector absorbed over 47 billion yuan in investment.
Wow.
Yeah, that is a staggering six-fold increase compared to the same quarter the previous year. We are witnessing embodied AI startups vaulting from early venture capital stages directly to the public markets at breakneck speed.
And this isn't just, you know, rendering videos of robots doing backflips in a lab. Limex Dynamics has a humanoid entertainment robot named Luna, and they have already begun physically shipping units to South Korea,
yeah,
with confirmed plans to ship thousands more to the Middle East. So they are turning the theoretical concept of embodied AI into a physical, localized reality that you can interact with on the street.
And all of this rapid, simultaneous expansion across memory chips, telecom paradigms, and physical robotics inevitably slams into neighboring financial markets, creating deep structural reverberations.
Right. And we see that impact clearly when we look at the South Korean stock market. The KSPI index went on a wild, volatile ride in mid-July.
It really did.
It violently bounced back up to the 7200 level, but the mechanics behind that bounce expose how interconnected and reactive these markets have become.
Absolutely.
The surge was driven almost entirely by a 27% spike in SK Hynix's U.S. depository receipts, their ADRs, trading on the NASDAQ.
And just to clarify the mechanics here for a second, an ADR allows a foreign company's stock to be traded on U.S. exchanges.
Right.
So that surge in SK Hynix's American receipts was heavily catalyzed by a cooling U.S. consumer price index.
Right, because a cooling CPI indicates that U.S. inflation is slowing down. And that lowers the probability of the Federal Reserve hiking interest rates, which historically pushes investors to take on more risk, flooding capital into foreign tech stocks.
Yeah.
So a U.S. inflation report pumps a Korean stock in New York, which then drags the entire Korean index up in Seoul.
Which exposes a severe structural fragility for the everyday investor.
How so?
Well, when an entire national index like the KOSPI experiences whiplash, dropping sharply and then violently rebounding, and it's predicated largely on the performance of just two major tech stocks, Samsung and SK Hynix, the ecosystem is inherently unstable.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
You now have highly leveraged exchange-traded funds operating on the NASDAQ that are specifically tied to these few Korean stocks. That leverages the price discrepancy between the home market in Seoul and the ADR market in New York, effectively hardwiring massive speculative volatility directly into the foundation of the index.
That sounds incredibly risky.
It is. For anyone holding a broad international ETF, your portfolio is suddenly swinging wildly based on leveraged bets regarding how well two Korean memory makers can fend off Chinese capacity expansion.
Man. So what does this all mean for you as you process this information? I mean, we are looking at a parallel geopolitical AI governance block, an Asia record IPO in memory chips, hyper-competent AI smartphone agents, and humanoid robots crossing international borders, all while neighboring stock markets swing on a pendulum.
That's a lot to take in.
It's overwhelming. So how do we synthesize this overwhelming wave?
Well, the most lucid synthesis comes directly from lawyer Kunjin Kim's commentary.
Okay, what does he point out?
He highlights two vital realities that frame this entire technological push. First, He identifies what he terms the three-front entry hitting South Korea simultaneously.
A three-front entry.
Right. In the foundational memory sector, you have the imminent, well-capitalized pressure from the CXMT IPO.
Okay, that's one front.
Then, in the critical AI computing infrastructure, you have Huawei's Ascend 950 superpods physically entering Korean data centers by the fourth quarter.
Front number two.
And finally, in the physical application layer, LimX's Luna humanoid robots are already crossing the border.
Wow.
So this isn't a gradual single technology creep. It is a coordinated multi-front physical integration into neighboring economies.
Yeah, it is happening all at once. The foundation is being poured, the walls are going up, and the grid is going live simultaneously.
Exactly. But the second, and perhaps most crucial point lawyer Kyungjin Kim makes is identifying the grand internal contradiction at the heart of this strategy.
Contradiction? What is that?
Well, on the global stage, China is pushing aggressively outward, right? They're advocating for international cooperation, open standards, and the establishment of a parallel AI governance structure via WAICO.
Right.
But internally, the policy framework is trapped in a fierce pendulum swing between fostering extreme technological openness and enforcing sudden absolute ideological control.
Ah, I see. Because you cannot foster a truly open, globally dominant AI development ecosystem if your engineers are constantly terrified of the language model generating an unapproved thought.
Exactly. The friction there is immense. I mean, look at the events of July 15th, occurring just as the WAIC conference was kicking off.
What happened?
There was a sudden implementation of new, stringent AI personification regulations. This resulted in massive AI agents, tools relied upon by hundreds of millions of users for daily tasks, being forcibly shut down literally overnight.
Overnight. Just gone.
Just gone. That severe whiplash, the deep friction between the geopolitical desire to lead the world in technological innovation and the rigid internal necessity for absolute narrative control.
Yeah.
That is the defining vulnerability in their entire AI master plan.
Yeah, that is a massive structural crack in the blueprint. Let's briefly recap the sheer momentum we've unpacked today because it's been a lot.
It has.
We are watching the strategic formulation of a parallel AI governance structure aimed squarely at the global south, backed directly by Xi Jinping. We are tracking seismic shifts in hardware, with CXMT's record-breaking IPO threatening the memory oligopoly, and Huawei proving they can network thousands of chips into megaclusters.
Right.
And we are seeing telecom companies transition from selling data to selling computational tokens, all while humanoid robots are moving from venture capital decks to international shipping containers.
It is a complete re-architecting of both the digital and physical economies, executing at an unprecedented velocity.
Absolutely.
And as we process all of this, there is one final provocative puzzle embedded in these sources that we must consider.
Ooh, what's that?
Well, we discussed the StepX Neo smartphone, right? The device with the AI agent that physically assumes control of your interface, opening apps, navigating menus, and tapping buttons to order your food or book your ride.
Right, the hyper-competent personal assistant living right in the operating system.
Now, consider the foundational business model of the modern internet. The multi-billion dollar global digital advertising industry, the complex algorithms of social media, and the incredibly lucrative app store economy itself. They are all entirely predicated on capturing human eyeballs.
Oh, wait.
Yeah. They require a human being to look at a screen, perceive a banner ad, feel an impulse, and make a physical choice to click.
Right.
If an autonomous AI agent permanently takes over the job of navigating user interfaces, opening apps, and browsing content on our behalf, what happens to that multi-billion dollar attention economy when human eyes are no longer the ones looking at the screens?
Oh, wow. I hadn't even thought of that. If the AI is doing the scrolling, it doesn't care about a flashy banner ad or a sponsored search result.
Not at all.
The entire monetization engine of the web just breaks.
It is a mechanic that threatens to completely unravel the current business model of every major tech giant globally.
Man, that is a staggering thought to leave on. It completely reframes the next time you pull out your phone to tap an app, because very shortly, you might not be the one doing the tapping, and the companies relying on your attention really won't know how to survive without it.
It's going to change everything.
It really is. We are watching a brand new technological order being constructed in real time. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the rapid changes in the world around you, and we'll catch you next time.
This program is provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim.